the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
I'm John Loeffler, and if you have noticed, everybody seems to be wearing mortarboards nowadays. Sometimes the kids forget to change the jeans underneath the college graduation gowns or the high school gowns, but that's okay. They still graduate anyway. Then we have to teach them decorum and pomp and circumstances. But it is that time of year when students graduate from high school or from undergraduate school. They get their bachelor's degree, and then they're looking at graduate school. And parents and children face a daunting task on how to finance a college education. According to the College Board, the cost of tuition and fees for the 2016-17 academic year is $33,480 for private college, $9,650 for in-state public college, and $24,930 for out-of-state college. Now, this does not include the cost of room and board either on campus or off campus or in a frat house, wherever, which can add easily another $10,000 to $12,000 to the cost of living. So our discussion today here, since this is involved in lifetime planning, is how a parent or a student finances a college education. By the way, is college the best choice? That's another question we have to ask here. And then looking at it overall, what are the options that you have?
Well, John, there's a number of options today, and I think most parents and students would be surprising at the opening of more options as ways to finance college, or in some cases, maybe college isn't the best choice, as we recently did an interview with Praxis, which we'll talk again today. But basically, you almost have six choices. One is a scholarship, either athletic or academic. Two are to go out and get student loans. Three are 529 plans. These are plans that parents or grandparents set up where you accumulate money, put it aside for college, and the money compounds tax-free and can be used to pay for college. So that's the third choice. Fourth program is sort of a work-study program. A lot of colleges will offer some kind of program. Maybe it isn't financing, but they're saying, you know what, we can put you to work in the library or something, and so you defray part of your cost through some kind of work program. The fifth program is one we often advocate here on the program. It's called the 2+2 program, homebound, where basically you go to a junior college and you stay at home for the first 2 years, so you're actually working. You're not incurring any debt, so you don't have anything like room and board, and the tuition at a junior college is a fraction of what it would cost at a major college. And the sixth option is something we've discussed here, and you're seeing this more and more, where it's an apprenticeship. So kind of think of the 14th century guilds, or what used to take place in the unions, where you will go through some kind of internship in schooling. Instead of going to college, you go through a special education program. And when you get out of that education program, you actually have a job. So instead of incurring student debt or loans, you're actually getting paid while you're on the job. And when you finish your apprentice program, you can have a nice paying job at the end. In many of these cases, the apprentice and the learning program may take anywhere from 9 months to a year. So it's another way of looking at different options for a lifetime career other than the traditional one where you graduate from high school and you go away to school. And usually that's paid for either in some kind of form of loan or grants or scholarships or a work program. I know, John, when you and I were going to college back in the 70s, the cost of college was much cheaper. I can remember going to a junior college my first 2 years, and the tuition was only $45 a semester. So not counting the cost of books, I got a two-year degree for $180. And even when I went on to Arizona State, it was only $300 a semester, so it was about $1,200 to complete my education. And I was able to work at the same time I was going to school, so I was fortunate enough to basically go through college without any form of debt, and then fortunate enough to get a scholarship to graduate school.
You know, this is amazing, too. I was just thinking of it when you were saying that, because when you and I were going to school, that was right after the Lincoln presidency. You remember that one?
Sure.
When President President Johnson became president.
Wait a minute. Lincoln?
Yeah, Lincoln.
President Lincoln? Okay.
You know, I didn't want to really tell everybody how old we really are, but I just thought I'd give a hint there anyway. But when we were going to school, we could get jobs. What I did is I did get about $10,000 in college debt, which was relatively easy to pay off. And I had a full-time job. I worked at a radio station doing a classical show in the evening. So I went to college during the day, and at night I'd spin classical music discs, and while the various music segments were on, you could sit there and study in the control room. They didn't care. I will admit, by the end of 4 years, I was about ready to go out of my mind, but you know, because I was running about 18 hours a day, I think. But when you were young, you could do that. But now the cost of living for college has risen 6 to 8% at a 6 to 8% inflation rate, and that makes it much more difficult to get a college education nowadays.
Well, it's not only that the cost of education has been going up at 6 to 8% a year, but John, where this really runs into an issue for parents is when you have two or three children. Let's say if you only had an only child, just one child, son or daughter, it's much easier to plan for education. But what do you do when you have two or three kids, or in some cases, four or five kids? How do you get four or five kids through college? You know, you take a public college education. If you take room and board, it's 20 grand a year. So that's 80 grand. Multiply that times four kids, and you're talking about 320,000. You go to a private college or out of state, and you're talking a major, major fortune. So that's why there are a lot more options available today that the child and the parent really needs to take a look at, not only in terms of, as we covered just a couple of weeks ago, about where the job opportunities are. In other words, where are the jobs? What kind of pay are they going to get? So you can sort of sort out, hey, if I go to college and I get this kind of degree, this is the probability that I'll have a job waiting for me when I graduate. And then also, what are the pay scale of the job that the degree will get you? So that's a perspective that I remember we had a client of ours. They had three children. Their oldest daughter got straight A's, 4.0 student, and got accepted to Stanford. The only problem is a Stanford education was going to cost close to $200,000. And what she wanted to do was be a grade school teacher, which paid $40,000. And so we had to bring the realities into the situation with three kids wanting to go to college. There just wasn't going to be enough money unless every one of those kids just took on an inordinate amount of debt and start out their working career with a massive amount of debt, which is the case of many millennials today.
All right, let's see if we can dissect this, to use a biological term there. Let's look at all six options and see how they might apply to different cases. Obviously, people can pick and choose from these based on what works for them.
Well, the first option, obviously, the best one would be a scholarship. So let's say that Junior's an Einstein, or you got a Peyton Manning in the family. The great thing about that, it can help defray the cost of education. In many cases, if you have a very gifted student or a very gifted son or daughter athletically, you can get a full scholarship in many cases, where the cost of tuition and board are paid for with the scholarship, and it covers the majority of the cost. A lot of these college endowment programs will cover the cost of education. So, I mean, obviously that would be the best way, because basically you have a college endowment program that is covering the cost based on academic achievements or based on athletic achievements. You know, you go to college. One of the gentlemen that works in our office, his daughter is a gifted athlete, and she's got a scholarship to college. My own brother's daughter is the same thing. She's a gifted athlete, and she got a scholarship. So obviously, if you have somebody that's very gifted, either academically or athletic, that's probably the best way. Because in this case, the cost of the college education is not on you. It's paid for by some endowment plan.
Probably number one here on conversation should be the most common option, which, of course, has led us now to the debt crisis we're facing on student loans.
Well, I mean, this is probably the option that many parents face, and it's one of the reasons why we have a student loan crisis in this country. Basically, what you're doing is you're applying either to a bank or you're applying to the government, and you're going to finance the cost of the education. Now, the first thing that you have to look at is you have to take a look at, can you afford the payments on the loans? So you want to take a look at the interest rate. A lot of these loan programs today charge a 7% and 8% interest rate, which is kind of outrageous when you consider that, you know, 10-year treasuries are at 2.3% or a little over 2.3%. So when you're looking at getting a loan to finance college, you have to take a look at the payment plan and the interest rate. Can you afford to make those payments? Secondly, you have to take a look at the loan versus the job that you are going to get educated for. So, I mean, if you're going to go into engineering, you're probably going to get out of school and get a high-paying job. But if you wanted to go into some kind of field where there isn't a lot of demand, that's why you really need to take a look at some of these programs out there. There is a booklet that I highly recommend if you're a parent or a student. It's called the Bureau of Labor Statistics Occupational Outlook Handbook. And they have a website called My Next Move. That's mynextmove, all one word, .org, to find out about the median salaries and career prospects in your field. And this is something that I strongly recommend parents and students do, because the last thing you want to do is go to college, take on a massive amount of student debt, and find out that the job you're looking for doesn't pay much and the job prospects are slim. So you want to take a look at the job pay versus the cost of the loan. And then you also need to discuss who pays the loan. Is it going to be your son or daughter? Is it going to be the parent, or is it going to be jointly shared between the two of you? And one, I want to give a warning out. It's a government program. It's called the Federal Plus Loan Program. And this is a very dangerous program if you cannot afford to pay the interest payments and the principal back. Because not only is the interest rate expensive, it's around 7%, but this is a program with the federal government that you cannot file bankruptcy. And if you can't make the payments, guess what? The government is going to come in and garnish your wages and garnish your Social Security if you're heading into retirement. So the second option, John, is student loans. And you really need to evaluate two things. What kind of job can I get when I get out of school? What's the prospect for the field of study that I'm going into? What does it pay? And then take a look at that pay scale in relation to the school you're going to choose and the money that you're going to need to borrow to get that education. As I mentioned earlier, we had a client that had a very gifted daughter who got accepted to Stanford, but she wanted to be a school teacher. And it didn't make sense to incur a $200,000 loan or education for a job that paid $40,000 upon graduation. So option number two is student loans, and you really need to take a look at the options of what it's going to cost you, the payments, can you make and afford those payments, and what kind of job you're going to get when you get out, and who is going to make those payments. Is it going to be your son and daughter? Is it going to be the parent? Or is it going to be both of you? And especially for you parents that have two or three children that you want to get through college, it could be quite expensive. And especially even at the state level, it could be costing you $80,000 to $100,000 per child. So, you know, you have two or three children, you're looking at $300,000. That's no small chump of change. In many parts of this country, that would buy a nice home.
Next thing we should talk about are the 529 plans. First of all, we need to describe for people what they are. But second of all, why more parents and grandparents don't take advantage of this?
A 529 plan is a plan that's been set up that if money is deposited in the plan, it's invested. Usually there's limited choices. You usually have mutual funds. The money earned in the plan, whether it's interest, dividends, capital gains, if accumulated for college purposes, when junior gets to college, you can take the money out of the 529 plan and use it to pay for a college education. And it's tax-free. You owe no taxes. And if you're saving as a parent or a grandparent for your grandchildren, it's probably one of the best things that you could do as a parent and a child if you're putting away money for a college education, because any of the earnings, any of the gains that you accumulate, imagine that, for example, you're a grandparent and your children give birth to a child and you want to put aside money for that child's education. Imagine compounding money for 18 years in, for example, like the stock market in a stock index fund for 18 years, what that would accumulate in almost two decades. And then all of those proceeds would be tax-free when used for college. So it's a cash payment. It accumulates tax-deferred. If used for college, it's tax-free. It's the most effective way to save for a college education. It's a great idea for grandparents or parents who want to save for their children's education.
Now, something that you and I are probably most familiar with is what is called work-study. Basically, you have a job as well as going to college. Now, you know, you're going to have a load because you have your work hours you have to put in, and then you have the homework and research hours required for whatever degree you're going for. But what you earn defrays the cost of college. It's really effective if you're going to college, you're working at home, and you're leeching off of mom and living at home.
Leeching. Okay, living at home.
Okay. And colleges are also setting up, and this is important if you can do this, colleges are setting up internships that make people more hireable. And in the broadcast division, I mean, not only were almost everybody in my division that were working towards a degree in the college working there, we were also working at a lot of the local radio stations. You know, that was starting in junior level. So as we got out of college, we'd be able to jump jobs and go higher because we already had a track record of college built in. Now, I know at PFS Group, you're employing interns and you're working with a junior college in what areas, finance or other things to give people a jump start that are in college?
We have two parts of our company, financial planning and portfolio management, and we're working with one of the junior colleges with their internship program. So we have a couple of interns at our office who work part-time. One of them's working about 20 hours a week, and a very, very bright, bright individual. And he is working with us for about 20 hours a week. He's staying at home, so he's not incurring any cost because he's living with mom and dad, and he's putting aside the money that he's earning into a college fund that he's setting aside because he wants to go to a state school. Now, it's interesting because he just got accepted to USC, which is a private college, but the education costs are $65,000 a year. And he's saying, you know what? Even though he got accepted, he's really debating whether he's going to do that versus one of the local public colleges here in San Diego, where he could go and get and finish up his degree. He graduates this June. But if he stays here, lives at home with mom and dad, he could continue to work at our firm, building up a kitty, and then also stay at home and go to a local public college and not get out of college with debt, because obviously he's majoring in finance. He understands debt. And, you know, imagine after 4 years of college, you graduate, you have a job waiting for you. We'd love to hire this guy permanently. But also, in addition to graduating from college with no debt, you also have a savings account or a bank account that you've accumulated so that, for example, as you start your working career, maybe later on you get married, you've got enough money for a down payment on a house. You contrast that with going away to an expensive education and incurring a lot of debt. So being a finance major, he's looking at this from a numerical point of view. He's been accepted to a number of colleges because the guy's a 4.0 student. But he's looking at it, goes, is it really worth going to USC and paying the $65,000 or $130,000 it would cost him to finish his last 2 years in college versus just staying at home and going to some of the local public colleges here, which are pretty good. And so he's looking at that. But the nice thing about it is at the end of college, he will have had 4 years of work experience of actually working in the field he plans to go into as a profession. And so the work-study program is a very, very effective combination today, and it increases the odds that you get hired when you get out of school, because it's not just that you have a degree, but you can point to your employer, hey, I have 4 years of work experience in the field in the job that I'm seeking with you.
Let us talk about the 2+2 program, which I know you advocate quite a bit, and it's becoming very popular with a lot of parents.
This is something that we really do a lot of in working with parents, especially with parents that have 2 or 3 children, and they're looking at the cost of what it would cost to send 3 children to college. And the 2+2 program is basically 2 years at a junior college where the cost can be kept to a couple $1,000s a year. And junior stays at home, so you don't have to worry about sending them off to college and the cost of room and board, which alone can run you maybe $10,000 to $12,000. So 2 years at a junior college, and then depending on what profession you're going into, 2 years at a state college, and preferably a state college that is close to where your parents live. So if you can get the kind of degree you want from a college in your local town, especially here in California, where you have big cities like San Diego, Los Angeles, and San Francisco that have all kinds of public universities and private colleges. So 2 years at a junior college, you stay at home. And also, in addition to staying at home, you also get either an internship or you get a part-time job. So number one, you can pay for your college. Number two, you're not incurring any debt. Number three, you're getting work experience. And in most cases, like the interns who work for us, they're actually setting up a savings account and building up a bank account that they can use to pay for, let's say, the public college after they graduate from a junior college. And the great thing about this is if you go to a junior college and then let's say you go on to a major college afterwards, your degree comes from that major college. It doesn't say, well, he only has a half degree from whatever college. No, your graduate certificate says you got a degree from that college. So the great thing about it is the state school, not only the junior college is a fraction of the cost of, let's say, a public college or private college, the state school itself is probably half the cost of an education of a private college. And it's possible, even if you go away for those last 2 years to a, let's say, public university within the state, you can finance a college education for less than $50,000. And if you're starting out with an internship or you're working, you can actually save, like the intern that's working with us that's graduating in June, he has enough money to pay for 2 years of college at a public university. He doesn't have enough money for a USC tuition because that'd be $65,000 a year, but he's put aside enough money plus what mom and dad have put aside that he can pay for college and pay cash for his last 2 years of school. And he's actually looking at some of the local colleges here in San Diego, continuing working with us with his internship where he continues to accumulate money because he's thinking, you know what? When I graduate from college, I'm going to have a bank account instead of loans, and he's going to graduate with no debt. And his chances, we're hoping he'll stay on with us, but the fact that he will have 4 years of work experience in the field that he plans to get his education in makes him more hireable to any kind of employer. And this is one of the things that we have done a number of years ago, and it's been very helpful to our firm, and it's very successful. And if you're an employer, you may want to check out your local junior colleges in your area, because a lot of these junior colleges are very big now on these internships where they can get students jobs in the field in which they plan to go work in or get their degree in. It does a number of things. Number one, the student can find out, hey, do I really like this field? And by getting an internship and working in the field, they can say, hey, I really like what I'm doing here. I mean, our interns love what they're doing. So it's a great work experience. I know in the case of one of my sons, he thought he was going to be a veterinarian. So during the summer, he had an internship at a vet, and after getting bit by a number of dogs, cats, and things like that, he decided, no, I don't think I'm going to do this. But that work experience let him know, or that experience told him, no, this isn't the field that I want to go into. So the internship itself can be very helpful in deciding on a career itself.
And finally, we go to apprenticeships, which in some cases, believe it or not, include fellowships or other types of grants to colleges, which they may be involved, but there are also apprenticeships out in the business world as well.
Yeah, we've done a program. In fact, we did one last week with an innovative organization called Praxis, in which case they bypass college education completely. What they do, they have certain kind of specifications and qualifications they're looking for in a student. You pay them, I think they're cost is something like $12,000. And what you do is you go through a 3-month intense learning program that prepares you for an internship in the field that you most likely will work in. After the 3-month, what they call boot camp, then what they do is they put you with an employer where you have a 6-month internship where you're actually earning money. The average pay is about $2,500 a month. So that's 30 grand a year. So you're earning money while you're learning on the job. And at the end of that 6 months, in 95% of the cases, the student has a well-paying job. And I'm talking about jobs that I've seen from their program that range from 60,000 to as high as 90. We had one student of theirs who was a graduate. I think it was either his first or second year out of the program, and he made over $300,000. So this apprenticeship bypassing college is also a viable option as well. But as you can see here, from the number of things that we talked about, there are a lot more options that are opening. And I think, John, you're going to see these options become more viable, because the old paradigm where junior graduates from college, you send them off to college out of high school, and you incur the cost of debt, it's just not realistic for many middle-class families today, and especially with families that have 2 or 3 children.
So to sum up all of this, your options are, there are about 6 of them. Number 1 is a scholarship. That's a good one, because you get it and you don't have to pay it back. Number 2, student loans. That's probably the least desirable, meaning don't do it unless you have to, and then keep it at a minimum. Otherwise, you wind up where some people are right now. 529 savings plans, tax-free. Of course, you have to do that long before your kids start into college, but it does work. It's a savings plan and it is tax-free. Work-study programs like internships are very good. Sometimes fellowship grants can be employed where people can be employed within various departments. There's the PFS 2+2 homebound program. And finally, apprenticeships with organizations like Praxis, which involves not only apprenticeship, but also rather successful placement. These are actually growing to ease that transition from college into the workplace. So those are your options. Now time for our real life case study, which is based on the lives of real people. Of course, names and circumstances have been changed, but the goal here is to illustrate the principles about which we have been talking. So, Jim, how do we do this week?
Well, this week's case, we're going to call, if you want to talk about how to blow up your retirement plan, we're calling this the case of Bob and Betty Blow Up, because that's just about what they did. Bob is age 58. Betty is age 59. They hope to retire in 3 to 4 years. Given their life expectancy, Bob is expected to last to 90, and Betty, age 88, a little bit more health issues on Betty's side of the family. They're moderately conservative, and their investment objective is growth and preservation of capital. Now, let's give you a little background here. Bob's a sales manager. He works long hours due to the high demand of his job and has neglected their finances for a long time. Not unusual to see this. They do not use a budget, and if there is money in the bank account, they spend it. So Bob manages their investments, and he makes his decisions based on what is the best performer at the moment, what he reads in various trading strategies and newsletters he subscribes to. And in Bob's case, he subscribes to too many newsletters, and each one of them has a different investment philosophy, which can be confusing. This has led to a large turnover in his portfolio, low returns over time, Now, he wants to retire early and travel the world with his wife and their kids, but it's just not realistic. Betty, on the other hand, is a real estate agent. She does okay in real estate and enjoys working for herself, but due to her experience in the profession, Betty and her husband own one rental property and are considering whether to purchase another. They recently bought a home because she loved the new property and felt it was the ideal home to retire in, even though it is much larger and more expensive than their previous home. The family is very important to Betty, and she loves spending a lot of time, and they spoil their kids and grandkids. She's anxious to retire, but doesn't want to make any changes in their current lifestyle. Now, it's amazing because we did a risk assessment. Their risk score on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the most conservative, 10 being the most aggressive, their risk score was 4, and their portfolio risk was 8. It was just incongruous with basically how they saw themselves as investors, and one of the reasons why they lost a lot of money, and a lot of it was just chasing the latest fad. And the other thing I think that made it more difficult is, you know, folks, when you subscribe to 4 or 5 or 6 different newsletters, what are you accomplishing? Usually most newsletters have a different philosophy for making money in the market. And when you're reading 4 or 5 of them, what's your philosophy? Now, what was important to Bob and Betty was maintaining the same lifestyle, proper asset allocation, avoiding losses because they haven't done that well. They didn't want to get to a situation, given life expectancy, of outliving their retirement. But realistically, they were unrealistic in terms of retiring early because they just simply didn't have the budget or the savings to do that. And so if we take a look at their budget, $85,000 for essentials, $43,000 for discretionary. So they're basically spending about $130,000 a year. Bob's salary was $85,000. Betty's was $64,000. And so they had surplus income of $21,000. The problem was they weren't saving much. They looked at if they retired, they figured they would spend more on the discretionary side. But their essentials, I mean, it just would drop to $72,000. But discretionary would go up to $55,000 because they want to travel. So they're still looking at $115,000 a year, which is almost $10,000 a month. Their rental income was $7,000. Their combined Social Security would be $64,000. And their shortfall would be about $44,000 a year. Now, if you take a look at their primary residence was $660,000. Their rental property was worth about $350,000. Bob's retirement plan was only $360,000. Betty's retirement 401k was $296,000. And they only had about $25,000 in savings. So their investment assets were less than $700,000. They had $800,000 in liabilities on which they owed on their primary residence and their rental. So they had basically a net worth that was less than $900,000. The problem that we saw that we had to talk to them about is, look, your living expenses are too high, meaning that you're spending more than what you should be saving. You have insufficient assets. It's unrealistic to think that, you know, you're going to retire and live on $10,000 a month when only $60,000 or $5,000 a month is coming from retirement, and the rest is going to have to come from basically your investments, not to mention the fact that you have longevity on both sides. So if you take a look at their income from the rental and Social Security, that'd be a little over $70,000 a year, putting them in a balanced account where you'd have high quality dividend stocks and laddered bonds where you would have some stability in the portfolio rather than chasing the latest hot fad in the investment markets, that would only produce about $18,000 a year. The problem with that is they would have a shortfall of $25,000 a year. And so we basically said, look, it is unrealistic to think that you're going to retire in 3 or 4 years. It's just not going to work unless you either, one, downsize your house, number two, dramatically reduce your budget, three, dramatically start increasing your savings, and number four, stop losing money in the market by chasing fads. So basically what we recommended is that they use a budget to help control their high levels of discretionary spending. We also made them aware about the potential tax benefits of moving to a different state with the lower cost of living so that they could better afford their current lifestyle. We're looking at either Nevada or Arizona. In addition, we also expressed our concerns about the recent home purchase and advised that they may need to consider downsizing in retirement to lower their expenses, because basically they upgraded their home and bought a more expensive home. You don't want to do that when you're getting ready to retire. Given their current financial situation, too, we also recommended they delay Social Security till at least age 67 so they can collect full Social Security benefits and give them more time to save for fewer years of retirement. We just basically said, look, there's no way you're going to be able to retire in 3 to 4 years, because there's just been a series of bad choices, whether it was not saving enough, chasing investment fads, overspending, and then upsizing into a house when you're considering retiring. What we suggested is they delay their retirement, they lower their expenses. We would help manage the assets so they wouldn't be chasing the latest investment fad. We basically told Bob, what are you accomplishing by subscribing to 6 or 7 different newsletters? You know, I took a look at some of them. Some of them were just wacky. And we also said, you're going to have to make a major change in your lifestyle. And one of the things that may work for you down the road is to move to a state where the cost of living is cheaper. I mean, they could go to, for example, Henderson, Nevada, or maybe Gilbert or Phoenix, Arizona, where they can live and get a house for a couple hundred thousand, maybe 300,000, half of what they're paying for now, and perhaps pay cash for the house, which would eliminate the mortgage payment, not to mention the fact that their tax rate would drop by almost 60%, and also the cost of living would be much cheaper there, either property taxes, utilities, gasoline, and you name it. So the idea, John, basically is you're going to have to reduce your lifestyle. And they really didn't like that idea, but I said, there's no way that you can afford to retire. You can't afford to live here at $10,000 a month when you don't have the assets to support that, and given the level that you almost have $900,000 in mortgage debt. So in this case, John, it's going to be a delay of retirement. It's also going to be increased savings. It's also going to be downsizing. And number four, it's probably going to be relocation to another state where the cost of living is cheaper.
So coming up tomorrow on the program, Kathy Ruby from College Coach will be the guest on the program here with Jim on financing a college education, which is, I think, an important thing. But you better plan it, because you see the result of all of the people that have wound up hideously in debt and no way to pay it off. And like you said, Jim, this is one of the debts you can't walk away from very easily unless Congress changes its mind on that. There's periodically political pressure to say people should be able to bankrupt out from underneath that. Okay, coming up in weeks ahead on the program, what are we looking for?
I want to do one more program on college, because this is the month and next month when students are graduating, and really get more into some of the options and details. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at evaluation of private college versus a public college. In other words, is it really worth paying $65,000 to go to USC versus maybe $20,000 to go to just a regular public college? And so we have an organization coming up that takes a look at the effectiveness of various private education, their cost, which ones are most effective in terms of job placement and getting a high paying career. So that's coming up in the weeks ahead. And then we'll turn our attention back to avoiding risk before you retire. All of that coming up in the weeks ahead. Meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. for our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.